Chapter 3. Warship Lacrimae, Trans-Plutonian Region. The 7th Legion strike fleet plunged into the ragged ships coming from the dark. The Imperial fists were few, 30 against over 100, but the numbers did not matter. The 30 golden black armored warships struck the ragged fleet in a tapered cone. Broadsides battered down the attackers' few active void shields, and lances sliced at their engines. The enemy ships began to tumble, their momentum pushing them forwards even as they spun over and over. At the tip of the Imperial Fists formation, three ships cut between the enemy vessels. They were the three Sisters of Spite, and at their head, trailing the fire of her engines like a wound cut across the dark, was the Lacrimae. Fire crashed after her and her sisters, cutting the empty void as she plunged deeper and deeper into the cloud of enemy ships. Behind her, her sisters began to loose boarding torpedoes. Schools of silver darts the size of Habspires slid from launch tubes on jets of flame. Each torpedo held a contingent of warriors in the rattling dark of its hollow core. In the belly of the Lacrimae, Sigismund stood in silence at the edge of the launch bay. The words of his oaths threaded through his mind as he wrapped the links of chain around his wrist and pulled them tighter. The largest of the enemy ships grew in his eye, its shape projected across the eyepiece of his helm. It was vast, an ugly block of metal. Craters pitted one side of its hull, as though it had borne the brunt of a storm of asteroids. It was still a warship, though, no matter how wounded. Macro batteries fired down the vessel's length, even as Sigismund looked at it. A moment later, he felt the Lacrimae tremble as it rode the edge of a blast wave. He tightened and fastened the last link of chain, and then raised his blade, feeling its balance settle in his grasp.
"Is it secure enough yet that you will not drop it?" growled a voice from behind him.
He glanced, and in his clear eye, the face of Ran grinned at him. His armor was clean, but the marks and dents of battle still marred the yellow lacquer. Sigismund nodded at Ran, but did not answer as he rose from where he had knelt on the deck. He looked behind him. 100 Templars rose as one. Ran's chosen, his head takers, stood in loose order beside them. The air rang as they beat their fists against their battered shields. The air was keening with the rising whine of engines. Servitors and serfs were moving back from the dozen gunships. Fuel lines were snapping free of wings. Heat was shimmering across the deck as thrusters lit. Sigismund looked at his strike force, moving his eyes across each legionary. Then he raised his sword in salute, turned and strode to the waiting gloom of his gunship. The warriors followed.
"So, this is the day, brother," growled Ran from his shoulder, as they swung up the gunship's assault ramp.
He could hear the snarled grin in the words. Sigismund gestured, and the hatch began to close. The frame of the gunship began to tremble as it strained against its tethers.
"Launch,"
he said into the vox. The sound of engines rose, and then gravity hammered through them as the gunship streaked out into the void. Primary Communication Array Control, Hydra Moon Fortress, Plutonian Orbit.
"All systems and connectivity functioning within ordained tolerances."
Captain Corro of the Imperial Fists acknowledged the primary Magos's drone with a nod, but did not look up from the tactical displays.
"Ensure that signal priority is given to fire coordination and the link with Lord Sigismund's fleet." "It is so commanded and ordained,"
clattered the Magos from its place in the roof above Corro's head. 12 Magi oversaw the operation of Hydra's primary communication array. Suspended in webs of cable around the machine column at the center of the chamber, wrapped in tattered red shrouds, they resembled chrysalises hanging from the branches of a tree. They did not have individual names, and the designation primary shifted between them. Together, they existed to oversee Hydra's vast communication and sensor systems. Everything from vox communication to fire control coordination and AuSpex readings passed through these 12. That data, and the systems which created it, were dispersed across the moon. But this was the point through which all data had to flow. Sited beneath the dish of the largest array, it was a quiet place for all of the voices that passed through it. Corro glanced at his sergeant. 10 of his company elites were with him in the control chamber, silent and watching from the edges of the walls.
Full lockdown is complete?
Yes, Captain.
One ship docked before the lockdown. A monitor craft bearing Astropas from Terra, but all other traffic has ceased.
Good, Coro said, and moved his gaze to where the dull grey of plasteel blast shutters closed off the view of the moon's surface. Jutting out from the crust of structures, the array control had clear sight into the void. Sometimes you could see the light of the fleet engaging if they were close. Coro had watched from here many times as his brothers fought in the void. This time, though, he had heard the words of the alert signal. Fire on the mountains. He felt his fingers flex without consciously willing them to, and realized he had bared his teeth at the shuttered view. An alert light blinked at the edge of his sight. He frowned and turned, as one of the servitors, wired into the banks of consoles, turned its face from side to side like a dog sniffing the air.
External sensors detecting movement on surface, droned the servitor.
Which zone? Asked Coro.
The servitor twitched, mouth chewing the air, and then spoke.
This zone. Primary communication array exterior.
Coro's eyes locked on the blast shutters. Cold slid across his skin. His heart skipped into a lower rhythm as he drew his weapons. His command squad were already moving, weapons lowered, fanning out across the chamber.
Give me the status of the exterior auto weapons, he called. Exterior weapons 11 through 24 are reading as active but not responding to direct command. Give me a visual.
The shutters blew inwards. Coro's helmet visor dimmed with the flash of the explosion. His world seemed to pause, the blast unfolding before him with all the gradual delicacy of a slowed picked feed. A point in the center of a shutter glowed red, then yellow, then white. The glow of heat raced across the gray metal as the center bulged inwards and then burst. A hollow cone of blue-hot liquid reached inwards. Servitors and machines ignited beneath its path. A shockwave formed in concentric rings, shimmering as they distorted the air. Time snapped back into full flow. The blast hit Coro and slammed him backwards. Heat blew through the front layers of his armor. His helmet display became a cascade of red damage runes. Debris and glowing pellets of metal spun through the air. Servitors and blocks of machinery ripped from the floor. Coro hit a pillar, spun to the deck, and rose in time to see the first figure come through the breach in the shutters. Bolt rounds were spitting across the chamber as the air rushed out into the void. Warriors of his command squad were already firing into the glowing wound. Coro braced to fire. A shape came through the breach. It moved so fast that Coro saw only a blur of cold blue armor and a flash of a blade cutting the light of gunfire. The spear struck him below the sternum, punching through armor and up through his left heart. He fell, his sight a blur, his throat filling with his own blood as he tried to rise. A figure stood above him, holding the spear, transfixing his chest. The pressure down the blade was like the weight of a mountain, though the armored figure seemed relaxed, as though he were doing nothing but resting his hand on the weapon's haft. Coro noted the indigo blue of the armor.